When people have that much shame, down deep, you don't have to kill a whole bunch of people to have shame. You're given it very beautifully by the social integrators. Thank you very much. They tell you you're undeserving from the get-go. And you carry that around with you. Men respond a little differently. When women feel shame, they feel shame just because, well, they're women. Men feel shame because they somehow or another they feel they never can do anything good enough. And they've projected mother onto their woman. And so suddenly they're back into being a little boy in shame. How many women have commented to us, I wish my man would grow up. He's like a little boy. And honestly, I have to take charge of things and I have to do stuff for him. He wants me to do stuff for him. He wants me to be like his mother. Right. And as soon as you become his mother, dear woman, all the sex and the romance disappears like that. Just bang, gone. Because now you're in a parent-child dynamic and he's in shame and he's going to have rages and temper tantrums and act like a little boy. And then you're going to judge him and try to fix him and try to get him back together and help him learn all the rules and get that, you know, become a successful person in the social integrator, which is the last thing he wants. And then, of course, when a woman is in shame, she shuts down and feels very, very guilty and feels that she did something wrong. So we get a lot of women saying, Galexis, what did I do wrong? How did I mess up this relationship? What do I need to do to fix it? What do I need to do to make, how can I help him? Notice the intention here. How can I help him be happier in the relationship and be nicer and not so upset all the time? Tell me, what can I do? And when you get to that kind of spiraled down place, to get back up requires forgiving yourself, stepping out of the egregor, stepping into your observer, back into your power, into your light, taking all the judgments off you, taking judgments off the other. Restoring yourself as a free, empowered light being. When you get it, how to stay as a free, empowered light being, you don't have those issues anymore. There's no more of those screaming matches, no more fights. There can be miscommunications. And after 5 minutes of little hostilities, it erupts in laughter. Oh, that's what that is. Dissolved. Social integrator goes, darn. I didn't get my fix from them today. And they get the energy. You get the energy. You understand the other person with compassion. Oh, gosh. You know, we just hit the shame spot. Now, it doesn't mean that that person, if you love that person fully, in whatever way you think loving that person would mean, besides loving yourself and being you, that that person's going to change and become the person you want them to be. Because the person you want them to be was originally thought up as part of the ideal. Don't forget. Often when you go into a relationship, you're looking for someone that the two of you can go towards that ideal together. Whatever that social integrator ideal, relationship ideal is, what you think is perhaps feasible for you or the new age version of it, which is a soulmate twin flame thing. Okay. The ideal the beautiful, fabulous relationship. That's what I want. Yearn, yearn, long, long. See, what you have to be very, very conscious here. That it all works out if you will stay in a higher resonance. And your empowered, free self. Conflicts will resolve very quickly. If they last at all. What you think is a problem. If you fixate on, oh gosh, here's another problem, and I've got to solve the problem, and I've got to focus on the problem, and we've got to work on this problem, you're just going to multiply the problem energy. If you step into your observer, into loving and valuing yourself, into not taking it personally, no judgments anywhere, honoring yourself as the free, unique being in your essence, what you'll find instead is that you'll get very clear about why you're doing this and why this is happening, and you'll get the message from your reality, and you can make changes, and you can, oh, okay. And pretty soon, maybe even in seconds, that problem starts to fade, dissolve, go away. Or the solution goes into your head intuitively. Oh, we can do that instead. How about that? Yeah, right, that'll work. And you function at a much higher level in your relationship. Now, there comes a time where there are some relationships, and as we said before, when you're functioning at that high level, it's a gift to yourself and to your partner. But if it's a relationship which really is not going to work for either of you, and if it doesn't work for one of you, it doesn't work for either of you. If it really comes to that, then you can separate kindly. No calling each other evil. No fighting and giving most of your money to lawyers. Now, there's a social integrator. The legal system and lawyers. Lawyers can suck a lot of energy, can't they? In big fees. Some of these divorces, bitter battles, the social integrator gets all the kicks, gets all the good stuff. The lawyers make tremendous fees. And they drag it out. And then their fees get bigger, 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 and they make more and more money. They're kind of exemplary of social integrators. That's why people make all sorts of nasty lawyer jokes. Because they can seem so ruthless. They take. You know, but if you have a conscious level, you'd be amazed how much easier it is to have a divorce or a separation, even with someone who's unconscious and angry and upset. In a traditional relationship, the image of that relationship is so important to men that if they lose that relationship, they're devastated. Not because they miss the woman, but it's like our psychologist friend, because the image is that they were not adequate somehow. They did not please her enough. They failed somewhere. And the world's going to know it because she's left. All the attention, all the focus is on what are people thinking about me? Me, me, me. Right? But being that you are conscious, you don't have one of these partners. But just understand, in a small scale, when you break up with somebody, they have that. And it's also the same thing with a woman. When the man runs off with another woman, it's like, what did I? Oh, I wasn't adequate. I didn't please him. I didn't. How could he do that? I didn't give enough. I wasn't nice enough. What? Wasn't I a good girl? Yeah, you probably were, and you were boring, too. Good girls can be awfully boring. Why? Because good girls do not do what gives them joy and passion. Good girls sacrifice themselves. Don't be a good girl. All you girls, right? Sometimes guys actually do good girl stuff, but it's rare. And guys, don't do the man code thing. If she's digging around in your vulnerable spots with a knife, recognize it's not really a knife. Look at it through her eyes. She's seeking to create, to get close to you. She doesn't know how to do it. Her intention, to a certain extent, is good. She may want to control you, but you don't have to let her do that. But what she's really after, what everyone's really after, the love part, she's really wanting to get close to you. She wants intimacy. Some people cannot handle intimacy. Have you ever noticed that when you're in a relationship and you go to a higher level of intimacy, all sorts of problems come up? Somebody gets scared, nervous, starts to pull back. Then the other one gets nervous, pulls back, and pretty soon they're withdrawn and separated. Like, what happened? Gosh, that went really fast. What happened? Because as soon as it seemed unsafe, they said, no, this is probably not for me. I better run and protect myself, save myself. Create safety for yourself. Bask in it. Love it. We're going to do a meditation shortly, and in that meditation, we're going to just drench in safety and love. And then we're going to go and just take all the conflict out of your relationship patterns. Take the shame out. All the shame out. All the pain out. All the guilt out. And with that, you can be smooth, heal, repair, rest, regain energy from a relationship rather than always be draining, drained. All right. What we'd like to do now is to go into questions.
Break.
Oh, we'll do break. Let's do break. And when we come back, we'll do questions. All right. Surrounding you with light and love. Farewell. All right. It is time now to turn to you, and you have questions. So put up your hand if you have one, and Daniel has the microphone.
Hi, Galexis.
Hello.
I'm called Valerie.
Yes.
And it's really interesting to try to formulate the multitude of thoughts that I have into a question, because I feel over the last, two sessions, you have just taken me down a road trip through the relationship that was so troubling to me. But I would really appreciate your perspective on the relationship that I have with my, I suppose he's still my current husband. And I think I'm looking for answers that speak to what was the meaning on the soul level, and what, as well as on the earth plane, because what you've spoken to already has brought so much clarity to me in terms of the big deal, in terms of the shame and various other pieces that I can't even begin to mention. But we entered into what we thought was a conscious relationship. It was very loving. And it was a big deal. It was long awaited from both of us, by both of us. And after the wedding so quickly deteriorated, and it was like I was watching a tempest, and largely was on the sidelines as the energy around or within engulfing my husband exploded. And it happened all so quickly from this period of expansion and growth and tremendous sense of divine flow to complete eruption. And
does he have a terrible temper, and he just, or what? What is the explosion? How does it appear?
Oh, gosh. It took several forms. There was addiction involved in his life path. And
all right, and to what?
Previously to alcohol, although he hasn't been drinking, but would play out his addiction in terms of smoking pot and overwork and other forms of behavior that just brought him out of balance. So it was kind of a moving target. He cycled through a 6-month period of rage attacks, and I was throughout kind of on the receiving end of a lot of blame and projection, accusations and rage, and at times he would just check out thoroughly, and at times he would be very evasive in his use of substances. At times then for a year there were acts of marital sabotage, which I was not able to navigate very skillfully.
Now, are the two of you still together?
No, he left home about 18 months ago,
mm-hmm.
and we have not even had a conversation about what's happening.
All right. Are there divorce proceedings, or are both of you just kind of being quiet?
We're being quiet.
Okay, so officially you're still married?
Yes.
All right. And all this started taking place after you got married?
Yeah, yes.
All right. In the man code, right, marriage is the establishment of a man in society. He joins society and he is now committed to climbing the ladder, the hierarchy of men, to become the great man, the powerful man, the rich man. And with marriage, an institution, read parenthesis, social integrator. The concept of marriage, you know, any concept with people who are dedicated to it, you're going to have a whole program of what it is supposed to be. How it's supposed to play out, what it's supposed to look like, and what the two partners are supposed to be doing, down to the last detail. After all, it's generally the guy who takes out the garbage. All the traditions, you know? Guy takes out the garbage. The woman loads the dishwasher, you know, if she doesn't, you know. There's all these kind of traditional things that they just little stupid details, but it's down to the detail. This is what a man does, and this is what a woman does. All right? When you finally get married, on those of you who have had that experience, shortly after your vows are taken, there's this, or you can even feel it when the vows are being taken, something heavy lands on you. But you're so excited and so nervous, you think it's just that you're nervous about it. But what lands on you is that you have now made a commitment to step into your culture, and you've accepted the social integrator of marriage, of the ideal, And with that acceptance, official, formal, public acceptance of that comes along with all the rules. And the rules say that once you get married, the guy has to do this success thing. He's got to be successful now. He's got to take care of the little woman, quote unquote. He's got to be the knight in shining armor. He's got to be strong and invincible. I never can show weakness. Well, that always continues, but he's got to take his place in the community. He's got to step into his authority because he's going to be father knows best for his kids. The rules of the game. It's loaded with duties and obligations. Loaded, 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 loaded. You got it too. You may have not responded quite the same way, but it loaded you down too. Because now, this is what all your good girl training prepared you for. This is your time to be the woman in your culture, the woman to be the helpmeet or to be the good person. You've got to be good person now. Now these programs are in the unconscious and subconscious in your culture. A man who has experienced addiction is probably still an addictive personality. An addictive personality is a very sensitive man. Now, a lot of people don't think that addicts are very sensitive because basically when they're in their cycles of addiction, they can be really nasty, they can be cold, cruel, they can be violent, they can do all sorts of crazy things. So people don't think of it that they are extra sensitive. An extra sensitive man, when he is in a good space and he doesn't have any pressure on him, no pressure, no demands, no weight of stuff on him, he can be so warm, so much fun, so spiritually high. But if he still has that shame underneath there and he enters into marriage and all the duties and obligations and commitments and the image that he's supposed to maintain at all times, perfect image, descends upon him. And frankly, it descends upon a person in the internal space. It's an emotional, collective consciousness energy. It's not physically visible, but when it lands, it creates tremendous pressure on him to perform, pressure on him to be this invincible white knight person. But a sensitive man does not handle demands, pressures, duties, and obligations well at all. Because the sensitive man has been shamed because he was too wimpy when he was a child. The addiction was his escape from the shame, which is very, very painful, enabled him to run away from it, to hide from it, to hide in his pot smoking or alcohol binging or whatever else the addictive personality chooses, and to calm down the intensity of his emotional body that feels totally out of control. See, a man's got to be in control. He can't let himself lose it. But when he has pressure and he's a sensitive man and he's got a lot of shame in there, he can be a beautiful, beautiful spirit. He can be very, very spiritual when he's in a good place. But when he feels this weight on him, all of a sudden he feels, oh my gosh, this is too much. I'm going to fail. I'm going to shame myself. I'm going to be embarrassed. I'm going to humiliate myself. I'm going to fail. I'm going to fail. Oh my gosh, I'm going to fail. It's too much for me. I'm overwhelmed. I don't know if I can deal with it. This is too much. I didn't sign up for this. This is, oh my gosh, I've got to be somebody. I'm not. I don't know what I'm going to do. Oh my gosh, this is too much. It's all psychological. It's all in there. And so there's this whole list of things that he needs to do. And feeling totally inadequate to do it, totally not wanting to do that, but feeling also that he has no choice. It's a feeling that descends from the collective into the psyche. Some of your response to him as he got loaded up and started to get angry just triggered more of it, because you were thinking that maybe he was like this person before you got married and that you could remind him of that. But that only shamed him further, that he had gotten too far away from his beautiful place, the place where he was living the fantasy, where he was living his dream. And his self-image, his identity shrank back into the shamed one. Back into the addict self. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does.
Okay. When this happens, he lashes out. He can't contain it. He can't hold it in there. He can't pretend it's not there. The pain, the shame, the rage comes from childhood. It comes from puberty. These imprints are deep. And they were not tended to. They were neglected then because he was so ashamed of them. He couldn't let people see his weakness. And he's angry at having the pressure put on him. And he didn't know where the pressure was coming from. It just felt like it had descended on him and he was in this relationship. It must come from you. My gosh. You know, now that we got married, she's changed and she expects all these things of me. Not true. It's the collective doing it. But when he looks out, who's standing there? You! Right? Must be your fault. Because in order to avoid the trauma and the pain and the just the incredible pain of shame, you've got to blame somebody else for it. You can't own it. It'd be too devastating. So he blamed you. It's your fault that I'm angry. But you see, in your culture, in the more repressed aspects of the culture, and one of the things that seems to be in general in schools, they've noticed that the creativity level of children is just taken away. And that by the time a person graduates from college, they have virtually no creativity left. Only a very, very small percentage, maybe about 2%, are creative upon exiting the school system. And they're still not as creative as they were when they entered. Right? This man was a sensitive man. He was a creative man. And the loss of his creativity was so devastating that he could not be himself, that he was wrong, bad, not okay. This pain, this rage about being suppressed led him to his addiction. Anybody who's an addict goes through this at some level. The suppression is too painful. They are too sensitive. Alcohol is very often the drug, quote-unquote, of choice for people who have blood sugar issues. These are identity issues where a person does not see themselves nicely. And low blood sugar seems to attract alcoholism. And when the blood sugar goes down, he gets really, really cranky. Ask any hypoglycemic. When the blood sugar's down, they really are cranky. They're out of balance. They need a fix. They need some sugar. Alcohol is a fabulous sugar. It goes bang right into the bloodstream. And not only does it raise the blood sugar with all that alcohol, it also numbs you out to all emotional pain. It's a surprise that there aren't more alcoholics, considering. However, pot smoking does not take care of the low blood sugar. It can distract a person from the pain, but the crankiness will come back right in there. It doesn't help assuage the feeling of not being loved, which is a lot of low blood sugar is not feeling loved and being really pissed about it. I'm not being loved the way I want to be loved. High blood sugar. You have to get off of alcohol if you have high blood sugar too. High blood sugar is like, I want more sweetness in life. I don't have enough sweetness. I want people to look up to me. I want to be needed. I want to be vital and necessary and important to people. So one way or the other, they can become alcoholics, right? His rages. He, in a sense, he couldn't really even help them. If you ever noticed that somehow or another something would spark and bang, there he'd go, right?
Yes.
It would just set him off. And it was almost like he would be put on some kind of track, like on a train, and boom, driven, and there was just no way he could stop the train. And that's what he doesn't even know when the train takes off. He doesn't even know what's going to cause that, what the trigger is. He's not even in control of the trigger. And all of a sudden, he's over the line. The channel calls it the blow line. And there's no going back. You can't stop after you hit go over the blow line. You have to get it all out. It has to be released. All this excess energy and the social integrator comes and say, thank you. Oh, this is really good stuff. Violence comes out of that rage. It's terrible. And then afterwards, he calms down. And as soon as he calms down, he goes right back to the shame because he lost control. That's not something a man is supposed to do. He did something wrong. He's going to blame you for making it wrong, even though you have no clue what it is. But somehow or another, he's going to make a promise to himself. I'm not going to blow next time. I'm going to be stronger. I'm going to take care of things. I'm going to be a man. I'm not going to let myself go so weak and fall apart like that. That's terrible. And so he kind of goes off by himself and into the man cave, quote unquote. He goes and hides a while, calms down, until he rationalizes everything that he's going to do it better in the future. He's going to be okay in the future. And he gets himself restored back to blank slate. Okay, I can begin over now. When he begins over, he sees himself now as innocent. You understand?
Yeah.
He's kind of cleared everything and rationalized everything and justified everything to himself. Okay, I'm going to try really harder. I'm going to do this right. And so I'm starting all over again, fresh. So I'm innocent. Well, so he's innocent. He still doesn't know what the message is. He doesn't get the message. He doesn't even know how to address the body chemistry issue that goes with it, or the love issue from his childhood. So inevitably the trigger comes again. And he blows again. He's out of control again. It's even worse this time because he made an absolute promise that he was going to do better and not do that. So it's even bigger deal. So if you notice, they kind of got bigger and bigger, didn't they?
Yeah, they escalated each other.
They escalated each other, and over time, he just would keep going over the edge. He was like hair trigger sensitive, and you were tiptoeing around on eggshells, right?
Yes.
Right? And the more intimidated and tiptoeing around you were, the more he was reminded of his failure. Because he didn't make you happy. The man is supposed to make the woman happy. To give her all the things and provide for her and have this wonderful, you know, situation. The Lord and his lady. Right? All that stuff. All that ego stuff. Didn't work. And there you still were, reminding him of his failure. He was angrier and angrier at you for that. Because he couldn't remember where the two of you were before the marriage. He couldn't remember that. He couldn't go back there. That was when he was in a good space. Before the heaviness descended upon him. You understand?
Yes.
So look at it through his eyes. He's just not good enough. He's a failure. That's what he feels. He's angry. And he feels powerless. And there's nothing he can do about it. Just nothing. He has tremendous sorrow and regrets. But because of his anger, he can't really go there and process that at all. The only solution is to get away, is to leave, to hide better. If he leaves and runs away from you, maybe he can run away from this problem. Maybe without the trigger that he thinks you are, maybe he'll be okay. Without the burdens, without the expectations of a married man, a level of responsibility he just could not handle. Maybe without any responsibilities, maybe he can pull himself back together. Underneath all of this is a beautiful being, creative, with a great capacity for love, which you discovered before you got married. And a great potential. But frankly, social integrators ruin everything. And when one is unconscious, they can ruin you. They can ruin your marriage, your life, destroy all your money, make you ill. If it's bad enough, the guy will commit suicide. If it's bad enough. He just ran away. He's hiding. And hoping that this is like an extended period in the man cave. That at some point he can get himself back to innocence. And then pick the pieces of his life up without judging himself too harshly. And try to move on. It's horrible, painful, devastating, and so many people have lost great lives over it. During this financial downturn that happened back in 2008, the financial downturn, downswing, created a tremendous number of bankruptcies. Here were men who were leveraging it tremendously to get into a house, to be the man, to provide this house for their family. And the economic downturn crashed. They lost their job. They lost their house. They were no longer a man. They were in shame. the suicide rates increased exponentially. It's starting to calm down a little bit now, but it's still pretty heavy. And the sad thing is that many of these men who commit suicide, which is the ultimate running away, their ultimate hiding, and getting away from the problem, decided, I'm the problem. I can't tolerate this. I can't live this way anymore. It's too painful. I need to remove myself. And very often they'd be leaving behind a woman and several children. A totally selfish thing to do and totally befuddling to everybody else. What? What? Can't he think about his children? What about his wife? Now she can't make enough money to support all these kids by herself and take care of all these kids and raise all these kids. Puts the wife in total squalor on the streets. Lots of homeless families missing their men. But no, he couldn't think about that. The pain of shame is so much you cannot think about anything else but a tremendously deep self-hatred for your loss of control and for your incompetence to make a success of your life. In the man code, that's suicide stuff. In, for example, the Japanese tradition, the samurai tradition, if a man was humiliated, he would kill himself. That was the noble thing to do. Even though Japan has outlawed, for a number of years, has outlawed suicides, it still has one of the highest suicide rates in the world because in the man code training there, that is the man's option. If it's he does something too humiliating, then he has to off himself. Man code taken to the absurd, painful extreme. So when you think about moving out of a chauvinistic society into one that's loving, harmonious, and so on, it's the shame that needs to be addressed. Because there are a lot of men who can't be who they really are. And they're suffering under the burden of shame. You know, when the channel was younger, she was very envious of boys. Because girls always had to be watched over and protected. And they had to stay at home and things like that. And the boys got to wander the streets and do all sorts of adventures. And, you know, she saw the Boy Scouts. They could go out and camp. Oh, man, that was fun. Camp and do, you know, mountain climbing and whatever the version of zip lining, but when they had that, do all those kinds of things. And they were doing these great things, which she would love to do. She was such a tomboy. But she went to, the most she could do, she went to Brownie Scouts. And they sat around putting bric-a-brac on bowls. This is no fun. And I don't even do it well. You have to make it totally even, so you have to be real, real careful with this stupid stuff. And if I don't do it right, I probably have to do it over. Ah! Oh, I want to be out in nature running around like the boys. This is it. She only went twice. That was it. No more Brownie Scouts. Because if this is Brownie Scouts, how much worse is the Girl Scouts going to be? The point we're making here is that the man code and the woman code have built into the system tremendous amount of pain and suffering. So not only does your husband suffer an extreme traumatic state of being, but it spreads it all over you. And at first you thought maybe you were doing something, right?
Absolutely.
You wonder, what in the world? Well, how do I do this? What's going on? He's blaming me. How do I trigger all of this? And so you try really hard to be nicer, right? Mm-hmm. Initially you try to do more processing and try to this and that and try to get on it, placate him, get on his good side, do something. I got to do something. You talk to him, try to get him to express his feelings. They're too painful. So the suggestion we have here for you is a mirror that it is there for you, is that this was your challenge to leave the good girl training, to learn how to love yourself, how to stay in your power, how to be free in the most awful of circumstances, and how to continue loving regardless. That's a lesson. And if you notice, you learned a lot of that, didn't you?
I did.
Right. You got out of the relationship what benefit, you might say, it could give you. Even though it was painful, even the destructive, it was rough. But you see, you adhered to your spiritual path and you dedicated yourself and you're coming out of it. And you will come out of it. You will not just survive this, you will thrive with this, because at some point you will be so far removed from the vibration of that relationship that it will amaze you that you even went through it. But what you're dealing with now is the betrayal of the dream. And coming to terms with that can take some time. Because you and he dreamed this dream together, which was your version, your alignment with the ideal relationship. Your version. And immediately after marriage, which was a big part of it, it all fell apart. It's like he pulled the rug out from under it. So it feels like he betrayed the vision. He abandoned the vision. He abandoned the dream. He abandoned you. Because he went into himself and it was all about him. Right?
Yes.
That's all about him. He was a little boy having temper tantrums. They got worse and worse. And exactly where he emotionally went was little boy. That's why he's acting like one. He was emotionally about 5 to 7 years of age. Maybe even younger. And when he was very little and he'd have a temper tantrum, sometimes he could manipulate with it. So he didn't discourage himself with that. For you, you're growing on. There's not much you can do for him. If you reached out to him, it would just be too much shame for him. He may hold on to the shame for the rest of his life. He may go running into another relationship just to repeat the cycle. He may go back into addiction just to hide and run away. But for a brief moment there, he did see a vision of his potential and of a dream. Right? And someday, he will return to that. It may not even be this lifetime, but someday he will return to that. To a grand dream. And hopefully, on a spiritual level, he won't take on more than he can handle of the consensus. This pattern is a real relationship killer. Anybody else have a version, maybe milder, of that? Yes? All right? Mm-hmm. Right. It's all over the place. It is the result and impact of a reality that of a consensus society. And this is the downside of the chauvinistic society. You think that men should have it good. They actually have it really, really, really tough. For a man to be able to survive all of the pressures that are put on him without being a total nutcase, that's amazing. Unless he's a psychopath, which means he has no guilt, no shame, and he doesn't mind hurting people. But your man wasn't like that. Unfortunately, the guys who don't care whether they hurt people or not, and whoever they step on, and they don't have any guilt, they have no shame, they have no remorse, have been the ones to gravitate to the top of the society. They are the 1%. They're the role model for all the men down lower on the ladder. See how sick that is? Unfortunate for all the men that their model of success is a psychopath. Okay? But that's the downside of this culture, and that's probably the greatest thing that will need to be healed for the new world. This is the biggest healing, is the shame. And you have to release your shame. And that each person who releases their shame is a step forward to the healing. Most men will not release their shame unless they are very dedicated to their spiritual path and are willing to do their emotional processing. It is totally terrifying for a man to face his failures, his shame. Just terrifying. And that's because the culture puts this whole prohibition on it, because if you face that, then you must admit you have weaknesses and you're going to get destroyed. You're going to get whammied. Somebody's going to come and destroy you. You'll be a failure, a loser. You'll be down at the bottom of the hierarchy and nobody will value you. You will be worthless, wretch. And for a man to actually be willing to look at this and to go through it, clear it, just phenomenal. He can step outside the man code. He can become free of the hierarchy. Daniel did it. One by one, men are going to do it. It takes a tremendous amount of courage. And it's a sensitive men. The one who are so faced with their shame in their very face, in their relationships. The sensitive men who will find the greatest benefit to doing this and will raise the vibration for the whole planet. But you know, it's known for sure that men do not read self-help books. No matter how many their woman puts in front of them. Here, look at this. Here's this. Look at this. Unless they are really strong, courageous men. Now, men will read a book about how to make money. Okay? Look at the market for that. Manifesting money. Woo! Yeah, big numbers. Guys will, if it has money in the title, success in the title. This is really well known by marketing people. Money, success, power. It has to be in the title. And guys will get it. But healing? Nah. That goes for women. Relationships? No, 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 no. Love, marriage, no, 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 uh-uh. Unless some guy fancies himself the authority and writes a book about men and women and his opinion about it. Now, we have to admit that John Gray did a beautiful, beautiful job to open up the door to this whole perception and healing years and years ago with this men are from Mars, women are from Venus. And now the whole lexicon, you know, is like you refer to a man as Mars and a woman as Venus. And so anytime you talk about Mars-Venus issues, they're not talking astrology. You're talking relationships now. But you see, if you want to have a great relationship with anyone, man, woman, friendship, any kind of relationship, if you can understand this, you can step inside that person and look through their eyes. Not at you. A lot of people want to do that. Let's see, what do they think of me? No. You step through their eyes. Why do they look at life? Where's the shame? What have they done there? What's their emotion? My, all right. This was so important. We're so glad you asked.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for being on the hot seat about that one. Because it's painful. And it's a big deal.
I thought it was.
Yes, it was. See, marriage was a big deal, and it was too big a deal for him. It took him beyond his image, his identity, his capacity.
And your back was turned to the other people, but when Galexis asked who else, most hands went up.
Mm-hmm. Now, it may not have been as drastic and as intense as yours, but when a couple is in the middle of one of these and the guy's raging, it's pretty intense and painful for both. It's very scary for a woman, whoever's not raging. Now, women can rage too. We don't want you to think only men do raging and have temper tantrums and act like a total... You know what? Women can do it too, but women have a different brain, and their brain responds to crisis and challenge and failure differently. And in that process, the only thing that we've seen that really consistently can trigger a woman who has that inclination to be rage-filled is addiction. A woman on drugs, alcohol, can be a screaming, crazy, outraged person and do all sorts of horrible things. Just as bad as a guy, and can intimidate her man. And he's tiptoeing, and the children are tiptoeing on eggshells, hoping that they don't tick her off. She hides the bottle. You know, all that stuff, all that drama, it's all shame. Overwhelm. Shame and overwhelm. So thank you for asking that. Or thank you for bringing that up. Because that's probably the fundamentalist core of the social integrator. That's the dark underbelly. The dark underbelly of the vision of the ideal. The ideal that no one can reach. Everyone's in shame. Now that was a long one, so we apologize to the others of you who had questions, but this really needed to be addressed. We hope you understand. It's important to understand where a person who is in shame is coming from and to have the love and compassion to give them some rope and to see through their eyes what they would see and how they would react according to the way they are responding to their shame, whether it's male or female. When you can do this and not take it personally, that's a really hard thing to do. Because it generally takes you by surprise and you think, oh my gosh, what did I do wrong? Why are they after me? Why are they attacking me? What's going on? You take it personally. And hurts. It's just tears you up. If you're on the receiving end of it. This amount of destruction in the future will end, but you can end it. You can end it for you, whichever side you've been on. Some people have been on both sides. Very often in families, the abused children grow up to be the abusers. It's just they don't know any different. But you do. And you've made a choice to heal and turn this around for you.